primary care knowledge boost, MSK miniseries, Nepean. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Primary Care Knowledge Boost. This is the final episode in our MSK miniseries that we've been doing with Tom Smith and Charlotte Baker, who are both first contact practitioners and MSK physios in Wigan. And today it's all about Nepean.
Yeah, so we get them to take us through another case, which is a fairly straightforward case, and then talk us through what they're thinking in their initial assessment, as well as the important parts of the history to tease out before taking us through their differential diagnosis for this.
Yeah, these have been a lovely little set of series, just focusing on assessment and investigation of different types of MSK pain, and we're really grateful to them for having gone through it with us. You'll notice that we do dive straight into to questions in the interest of saving time in these episodes to make them properly short and snappy for you to listen to. We hope you enjoy.
So thanks for joining us. We're going to talk about knee pain today. We thought we'd start with a case. We've got a 65-year-old gentleman, Brian. He started with pain on the medial side of his right knee about 6 months ago. He was previously really active. He used to be a marathon runner, and he's got minimal past medical history, actually. So it wasn't really bothering him that much until recently. And actually, he's really slowed down, and he's not walking as far. He's not running very much anymore. He is very limited by it now. He's really reluctant to take any painkillers or use any kind of gels or anything like that. So how would you go about initially assessing Brian?
I suppose we'd start in much the same way we'd approach other sort of body parts and conditions. So from consultation point of view, we want to take some details of what problems he's having, the pain experience, start with some open questions and allow them to speak. We can gain usually quite a lot of information within a couple of minutes of them explaining what the problems are and what the concerns are. So, yeah, we want to identify why they've attended, what the pain experience is like, the level of disability that it's causing, the impact that it's having on the life, the quality of life, and quite often sleep disturbance will come onto that list as well because it's quite unpleasant and can be a bit dominating from a pain perspective. We'd probably want to know some specifics about symptoms as well. So is he experiencing any sort of morning stiffness? Is the pain worsened with weight-bearing activity? Is it specific to a particular compartment? So it sounds quite medial in nature. And yeah, it might lead us to think about certain conditions before actually examining the patient.
So thinking more specifically then, rather than the general features of the history, is there really important points to elicit in a knee pain history?
Yeah, so has he had any specific trauma recently, or was it just a spontaneous onset of knee pain or a gradual onset of knee pain? Is there any mechanical features to the pain, like clicking, locking up? Is it clunking? Has he noticed it's swollen? If it is red and hot and swollen, is he feeling well in himself? Has he got a fever or really not any kind of infection? Looking for an inflammatory pattern, like Tom had said prior, that it tends to be more your osteoarthritis and your weight-bearing bones, but given we'd obviously screen for an inflammatory arthritis if they've any risk factors or any pattern to the symptoms. Again, ruling out red flags with that patient. Sort of ruling out any kind of possible metastasis. Has he got any history of cancer?
Is it worth touching on red flags at this point? Maybe talking about those a little bit more with knee pain.
Yeah, I suppose, again, we want to rule out serious conditions. So it's probably less likely that you'd get something like a metastatic deposit in a lower limb. It's not absolutely impossible, but it probably wouldn't be as high on a sort of list of concerns. But we'd still screen for general sinister pathology. So we still want to be asking around general health and unexplained weight loss. And are they feeling unwell, abnormal, intrusive fatigue and shortness of breath and those types of things? From an infection point of view, we want to rule out an acute infective arthritis. So is the joint hot, red, swollen, extremely painful? Are they getting any systemic features of infection? So myalgia, general aches and pains, fever, high temperatures, rigors, sweats, chills, all those kinds of symptoms we'd be screening for. And mechanical features would be on that list as well. So, so even though probably the vast majority of scenarios we encounter are degenerative in nature, you can still get sort of degenerative, unstable meniscal tears that can give you symptoms of clicking and painful catching in the knee, symptoms of locking and sticking, so the knee doesn't fully straighten out and it feels like something's blocking the movement, and giving way as well. So if something is sort of stuck but spontaneously relocates, then the knees can feel quite unstable. People can have falls and things like that.
So that's why knees might give way if something's moving.
It would also inform you, like, is there any ligament issue? So if there's a trauma history, then we'd be suspecting sort of ligament injuries, and that can certainly make it feel unstable as well. But with the degenerative patterns, like, they lose some of the joint surfaces, so the ligaments generally get a bit slack and loose as well.
And also when they have a locked knee, they don't use the quads as effectively, so then the quads is not keeping them up right the same, so it's getting weaker. So they're more likely to feel like the knee's giving in.
When you were talking about red flags, it was reminding me of a case where it wasn't a medial joint line. It was sort of higher up in his knee, and it was a more like a mid-femur. So I was just thinking about that, and that it was a sarcoma. That's the only case I've ever seen of a red flag where it was a primary cancer as well.
We had a tibial osteosarcoma. Yeah. It was presenting as an ankle pain, basically. And I think, again, it's probably the details of the actual pain experience that would make you suspicious of it.
Yeah. Like,
it's not related to ankle movement. They're not particularly responsive to treatment. They get worse gradually over time. And
there's location of it. Like you say, it might not be joint line. It might be higher up or lower down.
Just thinking about examining knees, any hints or tips about how to? So based on what you've already told us, so is it the same approach in terms of look, feel, move? And then, where do you go from there?
So we'd always observe the knees and compare to the non-painful side, and then obviously looking for any swelling, redness, heat, possibly check the calves soft, look at the range of movement, is it locked, can they get full extension, can they get any passive hyperextension, have they got any joint line tenderness or ligament tenderness, having a look at the patellofemoral joint, see does that reproduce any of the symptoms, is it feeling quite stiff but painful or not painful, ligament tests if it was appropriate. So if he's not had a trauma, I'm not going to be suspicious of like an ACL rupture, and but we would probably check some of the ligaments for laxity if there had been a trauma.
It's related to the context of the scenario, isn't it, really, in the subjective. So in traumatic sort of cases, we'd definitely do special tests for ligaments and meniscal structures. I think in non-traumatic cases, we'd say look, feel and move, expecting some degree of loss of range, and palpate the joint lines. Like, they're usually tender medial, predominantly medial with osteoarthritis, because 60 to 70% of the force transmission comes through the medial compartment in most people. So they tend to wear a little bit more unevenly in the medial compartment.
These are problematic knees. But yeah, perfect. So you've mentioned some of the differentials based on the red flags, as well as other things that you've mentioned. Can you talk us through your lists of differentials that you've got in the back of your head?
I think given his age and where his pain is on the medial aspect of his knee, we're probably suspicious of osteoarthritis, which we would class as a normal age-related finding. It may have just flared up. And with that, he comes like your degenerative meniscal tears. Obviously, we're looking out for things like an inflammatory, like a gout or infective arthritis. And again, we probably get a lot of that from looking at the patient and finding out how they feel. Have they got fever? Obviously got your ligaments on the inside of your knee, your MCL sprain, if he has had a bit of a trauma.
I think osteoarthritis would be high on that diagnosis list, wouldn't it, given the scenario? And yeah, it can be challenging to sort of, especially with a hot, red, swollen joint, it can be challenging to accurately differentiate between an infected joint and a gouty arthritic joint.
Mm.
Yeah, some cases where we have referred down an emergency pathway for suspected septic arthritis have come back as gout. I think there's been one case, hasn't there, where we did have septic arthritis and they were acutely managed the same day.
But again, that patient had come with a hot, swollen knee and feeling unwell and a temperature when we checked his temperature.
Yeah, so you could tell he was systemically not well before. Mm. Yeah, so really helping the diagnosis as well, but just being aware of not just focusing in on the knee. Yeah, really useful. Mm,
definitely. And then what about next steps when it comes to the knee? What are the kind of normal assessments, investigations that you would be doing as a next step?
Again, probably linking it to sort of nice OA knee guidelines can be helpful. So certainly osteoarthritis is a big chunk of the stuff we see with knees. So they tend to be sort of typical patterns with presentation. And it's a clinical diagnosis. So we can be very confident really just from the history and the examination around the diagnosis without the need for investigation. So we don't generally routinely x-ray. The diagnosis is made through the symptoms really. So if they're over 45 and they've got sort of no morning stiffness or less than 30 minutes of morning stiffness and weight bearing related pain, then we can generally say they've got osteoarthritis as a condition. Where we would probably investigate is if we suspected sort of moderate to advanced osteoarthritis, and in scenarios where patients have had quite a prolonged attempt to manage the symptoms without invasive treatment. So they might have been through therapy, they might be actively exercising, managing body weight, might have tried injections and things like that in the past, and we're sort of planning for surgery at that stage really. So then we do x-ray.
Sometimes we'd x-ray if we were suspicious that it might be a loose body.
I suppose with that we'd be looking at like mechanical symptoms, wouldn't we? So are they getting clicking, clunking, catching, locking of the knee? That can be managed via arthroscopic surgery. It's quite rare to get meniscal tears that they will arthroscope nowadays. So we still have a bit of a legacy of, especially with sort of gentlemen who are sporty and active, a bit of a legacy of expectation of washout and arthroscopy. So there's definitely been a shift in the last couple of decades away from arthroscoping arthritic knees, mainly because they realised that it wasn't a high clinical value procedure, so it didn't have a major impact on pain and quality of life. Mm. A small number of people were getting rapidly worse or developing complications, so we would refer for more towards secondary care if they were getting mechanical symptoms on a background locking on a background arthritic knee, so like locking, giving way features.
If you're suspecting a degenerative meniscal or that the meniscus is involved, I always think of, oh, meniscus, it's really important, it might be surgery. I sort of think about, oh, are they going to need an MRI soon or intervention soon? So I'm probably still held up in that, the old thinking. Any tips about, does it have to be very acute?
I think it depends on if they've got the mechanical symptoms, doesn't it? Like a locked knee.
Certainly with locked knees, then they've got an indication for surgical treatment. So if it's stuck and it will not straighten out, then we refer on and they will scan it. The challenging bit is around small degenerative meniscal tears being part of the arthritic spectrum. Yeah. So we know that they can split slightly, and if they're not causing mechanical symptoms, they tend to settle down over time without invasive treatment. So ideally we want to sort of leave cartilage where it is if possible rather than remove it. It still performs a function in the knee in terms of shock absorbing and lubricating and protecting the cartilage that covers the bone surfaces. we would probably manage those with injections if they're highly painful prior to referring on.
I think the history comes into it a lot. So if you've got a younger patient who's had a trauma and then they come in with like a swollen locked knee, then obviously we're going to send that down to like an acute knee clinic. But if you've just got somebody who's a bit older who's not really had a trauma and has got an irritated knee, you might and it's not locked, you might monitor that more and see if it settles down.
Oh, an acute knee clinic, that's good to know.
Yeah, we're very lucky in this area to have quite reasonable close links to the orthopaedic team, so we can refer via fracture clinics and acute soft tissue knee injury clinics as well.
I guess any other investigations to consider? We've talked about x-ray. I guess we've mentioned gout and things. Would we be thinking about blood tests?
Yeah, I think if gout is high on your list of differentials, then yeah. Looking for inflammatory markers and probably looking for serum urate levels. And yeah, again, coming back to patterns of symptoms with it, really. Sometimes the gout patients have had previous acute attacks of joint pain. The sort of common joints to get are the foot, like the first toe, metatarsophalangeal joint. So often they've had a history of variable on-off episodes of joint pain in the past.
And is it still true that, because my thinking, see, this is all probably out of date now, but when we were doing things about gout, it was that you don't take the bloods at the time of the, if there was an acute hot swelling.
Yeah, there's some research out there that suggests that your uric acid clearance increases in an acute attack. So you can actually get like a false negative and it still be gout. So you can leave the serum urate for a few weeks until the attack's passed. You might be more likely to get a more relative reading if it's abnormal.
But the inflammatory markers are still quite useful, although they can be raised with both.
Yeah, they'll be raised with both.
Yeah, I think generally, like, we just tend to treat it. Yeah. So if there's a suspicion of it, we probably want to get them on appropriate medication quite quickly and get them through the attack and then look at the sort of serum uric acid levels and look at like urate-lowering therapy if it's needed and hopefully prevent future attacks with it, really.
Lovely. Yeah, sorry. Sideline.
So, yeah, any useful resources around the knee for either clinicians or patients that you want to point to?
We often point people in a direction to the Escape Pain program online, particularly if they don't want to or they don't feel the need to go down a physiotherapy route. It's got lots of useful information for patients on lifestyle. It's got exercises on it, talks about pacing, the importance of pacing, importance of back pain relief. So we would often point them in the direction for that because they can do it online or you can refer it into physio and they do a class there, or you can refer to the Be Well team. They also run the Escape Pain class. Versus Arthritis always have some really useful resources in Age UK.
Yeah, some of the charitable organisations like Pain Concern in Age UK have got.
For clinicians, are probably like the NICE guidelines.
The NICE guidance has been updated recently as well. So again, it gives us sort of guidance around diagnosis, when investigation is or isn't appropriate, when it's appropriate to refer on. And the medication management side of things as well, which is quite helpful. We use some NHS decision-making tools as well around various conditions, so they can be helpful for us and helpful for other patients in terms of informative and helping them make decisions about what they want to do and how they want to manage things, whether it's invasive, non-invasive, and the risks that are involved.
Yeah, really useful. Thinking generally about assessing and managing knee pain, any top tips that you want us to take away from our chat today?
With these types of joint presentations, we want to sort of understand the level of severity that they're experiencing. Is it mild, moderate, severe? How would they gauge it? How is it impacting them from a lifestyle perspective, a day-to-day activities perspective, a sleep perspective? Is it stopping them from doing active hobbies and interests and maintaining health in those kind of ways?
I think a lot of reassurance is really good as well. You know, if they have already had an x-ray at some point and it's shown arthritis, and he's just being reassuring about it, saying it's a normal age-related change, you know, so that they're not worried about it, because we get a lot of patients that are worried about arthritis. But we do try and sort of reassure them by saying it is normal, you know, normal age-related change.
Yeah, that kind of really important in terms of making sure they've got the power to carry on moving and the confidence to move.
The importance of keeping moving and exercise, lifestyle factors.
So with this gentleman, we'd probably, if he was still capable of running, we'd probably still encourage them to run. There's definitely been a change in thought process from an orthopaedic perspective as well, in that there's not really a lot of evidence to suggest it's damaging to joint surfaces or will accelerate arthritic changes. So we want to keep them appropriately active, really, in relative terms.
Yeah, and if we're thinking away, and obviously he's quite active, we'd probably try and encourage him to do a bit more strength-based exercise. So we can use, like I said, we've got the Be Well team in Wigan. They'll probably be equivalent elsewhere, where they can, health trainers can do strength programs, or we can access physiotherapy if we feel like they need a bit more support with it.
Brilliant, yeah.
So again, coming back to the NICE guidelines, the medications are a bit of a hot topic at the moment. So they've sort of removed paracetamol from the guidance. So that's not recommended for management of arthritic joint pain. The topical NSAIDs are recommended as a first line treatment. And they can be stepped up if they're ineffective to anti-inflammatories. I say it's not recommended to offer weak opiates unless all the other treatments have been considered and failed. We do consider intra-articular corticosteroid injections as well for the management of arthritic joint pain. Yeah, I think that's about it.
Grand, lovely, wonderful. Yeah, oh, thank you both so, so much. It's been a wonderful little mini-series.
Yeah, it's been fabulous talking to you. Thank you. So, Sarah, now that we've had our last in these three episodes of all about MSK types of pain in joints, what was your takeaway from this one?
Yeah, I think similar to the previous, in that just how much more they understand about all the different pathways, actually. So I didn't know there's an acute knee clinic in Wigan. That's brilliant. but that they can refer into it, and that they sort of understand the difference in terms of, so if there was a meniscal injury, if it was acute, that would be potential, particularly if it's locking, that would be a potential for surgery. But actually a lot of the things where you might get medial joint pain that's more related to arthritis. I always think, oh, medial, it must be meniscal, or it must be a medial collateral ligament issue. Whereas, I think I'm forgetting about the osteoarthritis elements, and really interesting learning points about just normalizing that a bit more and making sure that they are empowered to keep moving. And yeah, interesting about their keep running if you can. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And also just about the again, reflecting similar to the other episodes where investigations aren't used very frequently that kind of primary care sphere. And actually a lot of it is clinical diagnoses from the history and examination. And I think you're right, like what you said before about it coming from their experience and their knowledge and their comfort levels with musculoskeletal presentations. But I did find that really interesting, just how comfortable they were with making those diagnoses without any investigations.
Yeah, really good. Yeah, and just like that, how much the history will guide you down those lines, and always remembering to think about red flags. Really good conversation about some of the less typical, more concerning features that we were kind of reflecting on after we finished recording as well. Just sarcoma being so rare, but really important to kind of think about, and that being a progressive history and very tender and might not be in a very, you know, not likely to be a joint area. But then, you know, equally just thinking about these concerning features and just casting the net wide. Yeah, really useful.
Yeah, definitely. No, I think there's been a really good series, just going over that basics again for everybody, and picking out those concerning features to be aware of and trying to help people be able to make those clinical diagnoses a little bit more. So yeah, I think it's been quite helpful.
Yeah, and raising the profile and awareness of the first contact physio practitioners. I don't know how we functioned without them.
Oh my gosh, yes, their knowledge is amazing. So yeah, if you want to get in touch with us in any way, we'll put the links in our episode description. Thank you to everybody who does get in touch and give us feedback. We do really appreciate it. And yeah, thank you for listening this far with us. And we'll see you on the next episode.
Till next time.
On Primary Care Knowledge Boost.
This podcast has been able to continue to date due to the support of GP Excellence, Greater Manchester Integrated Care, and the Greater Manchester Training Hub.
Just a friendly reminder that these podcasts are for healthcare professional education and shouldn't be used for medical advice by the general public.
This episode was recorded in Greater Manchester in 2024. Guidelines can vary by location as well as over time, so always check for up-to-date local and national guidelines before making treatment decisions.
The content is based on our interviewees' opinion and interpretation of current best practice. It's your responsibility to use your clinical judgment before applying or relying on information solely from this podcast.
Check out the episode description for full details and any links we may have mentioned in the episode.